喂，基隆啊，喂，基隆罗，喂，基沃吼，喂，基隆多，喂啦，德玛纳哦，德喂，酷喂呀，酷喂呀 ，Who am I? I am the waters. Kita taho toku kui kui on my grandmother's side. Orangi tikei te awa. E roto I te rohe o Ngāti Kohunganu. On my grandmother's side, the Rangi Tikei is our ancestral river, and the tribal area is Ngāti Kohunganu.
Hey folks, you got the morning show with Aaron, and in the studio I've got Ngarano Renata. Good morning.
Ata mare e te whānau whānui o Whaingaroa. Nā mihi ki a koutou I tēnei ata.
So that was a bit of a guess. We took a stab at it, thought we're going to play something, and it didn't come out as we anticipated.
Oh, all good. All good. His name was Jerome Cavanagh,
yes.
Kavanagh.
Yeah.
And he's been playing taonga puoro, which is traditional Māori instruments, for several years now. And I connected with Jerome through my daughter Komako, who made a short film about Jerome's journey with taonga puoro.
Right, right.
Back in the day. They actually travelled to India together to do, it was a collaboration in Mumbai with the Indian community and introducing them to the taonga puoro. And of course, during that journey, they were to find that within the Indian community, of the ancient music, there were already the conch was already present, which is a particular instrument within Te Ao Māori, within the Māori world as well.
I think people are familiar with conch or the concept of a conch.
I think so.
Hopefully,
perhaps.
Yes. Hands up if you're not.
So the conch really is came through the Pacific.
Yeah.
In terms of what we know as a putatara, which is the joining of a wooden mouthpiece on a conch, a shell, it's not really a shell. I mean, that doesn't really do it justice. The conch has a very specific kind of look, and also the sound quality can be very deep. It has different pitches, as a pitch.
I think all I've seen is like in movies, I mean, they want a dramatic moment at the start of something. Someone stands on a beach and blows the conch. And it's big. It's a big shell. Like, you're talking about a foot long is the stuff I see in movies.
Well, I think the word there for me is dramatic.
Yes.
One of its personalities is to make an announcement.
Oh, come back to the mic.
An announcement of an event, kaupapa, to alert it was used to alert the tribe that we're going into war immediately, or manuhiri are coming. So there are various ways in which the conch was used within tribal society to, what was that fabulous word again that you used?
I've forgotten.
Dramatic.
Yes, a dramatic moment.
And it definitely has that quality within Te Ao Māori and within the kete of taonga puoro, which is the general term used now. There are many terminologies, but taonga puoro refers to instruments that are made, collaborated with nature, that produce oro, pu oro sound.
Okay, right.
And the sound in the particular one that I wanted to introduce us to this morning is Hene Pū Te Hue, which is the family of the gourds. Now,
I'm looking at a photo, folks.
Yes, so I'm sharing a photo which was when many years ago, we were introduced to a rangatira who was the head of art at what was the church college at that time, and his name was Royce Bulkey.
They're just the one out of Hamilton.
Yeah, at Tuhi Karamea.
Yeah.
And he was a master, absolute master of those in that picture, this particular picture. They were his collection of hue that he had grown.
They are huge.
They're huge.
You could almost climb inside them. If you could get in, like I'm just trying to, you know, that big.
Well,
you wouldn't.
Well, they were
the Taonga part tells us, calling it Taonga Puoro is tells us we really shouldn't be doing things like that. But
and yes. So we proceeded to take on board his Royce's teachings,
yeah.
And we grew the hue. This particular photo is of a what they call African giants, and they were grown specifically. To make sitar, which is an Indian instrument.
Yes, yep.
But there was also an acknowledgement during that time of the kākano hue that had been brought with Māori to grow, light to carry, you know? Like to carry that's I'm kind of vibing and thinking a lot about what was carried on the waka, and it's like having, you know, on board luggage. They were very sensible about what they brought, so many seeds were brought,
yeah.
And then that the seeds of the hue, when they produced their fruit, they were eaten when they were young. But as they grew and became very hard, thick shells, their job or the mahi that they were to do was to hold water.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we didn't have, if you can think back or feel back to that time, pre-European, there was no use, clay wasn't fired to make into vessels of any kind. It was, the hue was a vessel for carrying water and for storage of many of the preserved foods of Māori.
Okay. And they, do you eat, how do you process, because you've got a very large vegetable there, how do you process the vegetable to make it into a container?
Oh.
You scoop everything out,
I guess. My gosh, that's the whole story, isn't it? That's the end of a story of a growing of the hine pute hue.
Have I jumped to the end?
Yeah.
Okay, all
right. You've jumped to the end of that. So hine pute hue was the sister of, I think she had other sisters, but she was a sister to many brothers. And what happened over time was through her personality, she was to calm the waters. Her brothers were continually out of sorts with each other, couldn't see outside of their own amu-amu, their own fighting and infighting. Mm. And so she was able to bring through her being a sense of calm that was to enable them to think more clearly. Enable them to put away those raru-raru, those things that weren't important at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that was through her, the way that she sounded. So we say her belly, her puku. She is, as you can see.
We need her now more than ever.
Yes, we do. You're absolutely right. We need that now more than ever. It's not to try and change your ideas, but about that you don't have something to offer or say, but it's more about doing that in a particular way that you can feel more at peace with who you are. So there are many varieties of hue all over the world, of gourds.
Yeah.
Generally known as calabashes.
Oh, I've heard that word, yeah. Yeah.
And they're really, it's quite amazing. In Mexico, I showed it to the Mexican whānau who live here in Raglan.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, yeah, we know those. We use those for cups. They're still used for, they use mate tea. They've got this mate tea that they drink every day.
Mm.
And she showed me one of the vessels, and it was a smaller hue that had been beautifully crafted. And she said, oh, yeah, that we use those in Mexico, Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's many, many stories of their all around the world.
So where did they came to Aotearoa from the islands, from Polynesia.
Well, they've done a lot of journeys. They were in India for thousands of years and made into the sitar and other classical instruments of northern India, northern and southern India.
I guess what I'm thinking here is that it's such a useful plant that it just spread wherever people went. You know, people would discover and go, yes, we want to use that as well.
Possibly. I think it's also the kaupapa of the hui. What I have learned over the years is that the vine itself, it grows on a vine.
Yeah.
So you make certain arrangements so that it can grow successfully from seed to maturity as a fruit. It's a type of fruit, really. Then it can also offer... It's got many offerings, but that's what I wanted to share with you was the flower which becomes the gourd, the hue. There are two flowers that grow on the same vine, a male and a female.
Okay.
So they...
It's kind of vaguely reminiscent of a pumpkin.
But it's the botanical name.
Vaguely.
it's botanical name which tells you that they're not cousins. They're not even cousins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In fact, that's a really good point that you raised around pumpkin. If you want to keep the strain pure and you want to grow hue, you don't grow pumpkins.
Oh, really?
You don't grow anything like that, like zucchinis, watermelons, kamo, any of those type of fruit, seed-bearing vegetables.
Do they kind of cross-pollinate or something?
Bees do lots of cross-pollinating, when they get their hands on the pollen.
That's what they're all about.
When they get their feet on the pollen.
Mm.
So if for the purity of the whakapapa of Hine Pūte Hue, if this is your year to grow hue, you wouldn't grow the other crops anywhere nearby, even across the road.
Okay. That's right. Segregate the bees.
Segregate the bees. There's a rather beautiful offering in terms of sound. It's not sounds that we're... commonly fill our ears. We're much more used to an array of orchestral, symphonic type sound in the Western world.
Yeah.
I'd like to say that hue, because it is a rongoa of sound, what it offers is an opportunity to sink into a singular vibration of sound that we're unaccustomed to. Because we have been given so many opportunities I studied Western classical music,
right.
So I understand. I studied at the Northern Rivers College of Advanced Education in Lismore, and there was nothing around a singular sound. It was all about symphonic sound. It was all about orchestral sound. Even going back into medieval times, there was all, you know, a combination of instruments. And I believe that Māori have coming forward, and with the work that I'm very much involved in, that Oro Māori is the which is the sound of traditional Māori instruments, will have a place in the not only music, it's music, yeah, it has music, but it has an offering that of a greater content towards healing, towards hauora.
Okay, yeah. I'm trying to see if I could find the sounds anywhere, but I'm not doing very well. So can you describe the sound with words? Is it a deep? I'm guessing deep, rumbling sound. My typing's really bad. I've got a B in there.
It has many sounds because you play a puruhau, which is a large hue. There were not many in the recent 30 years that actually came forward as significant performers. There's just a handful of people, because it has done a revitalization in the last 35 years of being available. Being available as well.
Did the skill, the knowledge of how to play, actually survive?
I'd have to say that the late Hidini Melbourne was responsible for that renaissance and revitalisation. Mm. If it wasn't for Hidini sitting in those early wānanga, I studied under Hidini at that time, a paper called Ngā Taonga Whakatangitangi at the University of Waikato. Hidini was then attending many wānanga in Tūhoe and Ngāi Tūhoe tōna iwi, and many other iwi were then coming forward with what had we have now as a body of mātauranga, rangahau. We know that these instruments were very common, much more common within the life of Māori, because Māori love sound. Love singing. That's not unusual.
For humans.
We love sound, we love singing. Yeah. So, you know, kind of like, oh, it wasn't a surprise. But the Renaissance actually involved getting back to what did they look like, how were they played. And what we found was there's hundreds of taonga pūoro sitting in museums all around the Western world that are never seen by iwi, by tribal people.
Right.
Hundreds, probably thousands.
Of the real deal, like the original.
Oh, yeah, the original.
Made by the, and traditionally, yeah.
Yeah, because the collections in these museums, in terms of taonga pūoro, are never seen by us unless you get special permission to do so, and Hidini was one of those people, and so we were like, oh, my beautiful, how beautiful. They were not only beautifully played, could be beautifully played, they were ornate, they were taonga.
Mm. So he was able to find people who still knew how to play.
Well, he was a musician. A very seasoned musician and composer himself, so he was drawn to that.
Do you think there are like songs or pieces that were lost?
Yes. Mōtiatia is a significant piece of writing in which the hui mōtiatia, which is a form of chanting, forms of chanting, are recorded. Mm. Yeah.
When were they recorded?
1930s, 40s.
Okay.
So with handheld mics. And those people who were reciting them were in their 80s.
Wow.
So
the overlap was just with modern technology, was just enough to...
Yeah, you can get those in the archives.
It survived long enough for the technology to be okay to record it, just... A lot of other cultures, I don't think they had that, but the timing here is...
I think the settler nation were very keen on recording since they arrived. And so when that technology became available, there are significant pieces of sound and interviews that were recorded back in the day around the First and Second World War.
That's a treasure.
Yeah, the Second World War and First and Second World War were interesting times of recording significant pieces, just because people were coming together in an unusual time, and they were recorded. And those collections I have some of that work because... my interest in those areas. And so, but you catch them on maybe like what I have is a recordings from the First and Second World War of the Māori Battalion.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, really unusual pieces of work. And you hear the haka, you know, in its full vibrancy, and you hear it, and you really understand the modi of how music was made. At that time, you know, I mean, I'm going right off the track here, but they often adapted a English tune.
Okay, yeah.
And Māori words, and people go, oh, I know that tune. Oh, yeah, but you don't know those words because they're Māori words.
Yeah.
That was a fun thing to do, I think.
Yeah, well, that's a living culture that people are just, yeah, doing it for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you had to have those times during you know, wartime or post-war to help heal the people, you know? And, yeah, so it was... So coming forward with Hine Pū Te Hue, in this community there are several groups and families, whānau, that have learnt from myself the growing of hue, the growing and the harvesting of hue, and their interest has grown into wanting to understand what do I do now once I have the gourd.
It's grown to its full size.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry, folks, we're using our hands again. Anyway, are we going basketball size here or a bit bigger? Never mind. What are we?
Basketball size. Thank you for that reminder. That reminds me of something else. Yes, the African giants, which are highly sought after for the Indian instrument, are very difficult to find right now. And so are the little ones, the tiny ones for punga ihu, which are small nose flutes. So flute wasn't only, the hue wasn't only played with the mouth, it was played with the nose. Nose flutes.
Nose flute, yes.
That's a whole field. A whole field of another way of understanding how sound was produced. I'm seeing on the screen there Jerome, and he's doing wonderful work, beautiful work, and horomuna. There's many wahine toa also who are contributing to the field of taonga puoro, and are definitely, you know, te rere te kahu rere moa.
Oh, we might get a noise out of that. Hold on. Okay, shall we try that? You want to try?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, let's do that.
All right, folks. Let's just make it so you can hear. So I'm just going to turn your mic down.
And it creates quite a peaceful feeling and sound for baby and mum. Through and really just tuning into the mum and to the breathing and making the sound and synchronising with the mum during her.
Okay, there we go. That was just a little taste of, we're talking to Ngaronoa Renata about hui, which is the growing of a gourd to use as a musical instrument, put it in English terms. Am I right? I think I'm right. But you said, and you know how to do this, and you're showing people how to grow locally. And
yeah,
the next step is how to turn it into an instrument?
Yes, yes. We're currently working on a very big proposal that will enable us as a team of wahine toa to have a wānanga, online wānanga situation for that purpose, for a range of offerings around the making of taonga puoro,
yeah,
the hearing of the sounds, actually receiving the within a sound journey through taonga puoro, and to experience well-being, mental, social, emotional well-being, and also to offer what's possible with the making of instruments. Mm. in a traditional, and not only in a traditional way, but yeah, there are, you know, karakia for planting, there are karakia for harvesting, there are ways of honouring that through tikanga, so that it's done in a genuine way to, enhance your life artistically.
And is this, if people are hearing this and want to do this themselves, what do they do? Can they look up stuff online or?
You're welcome to contact me, because I do am very happy to help with that journey. Very, very happy. So, well, what's the best thing to do? My phone number, or
if you want to put your phone number on the radio, you can.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
not everybody does, but.
Oh yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
So it's 0274142414 Ngaro noa.
And for those of you who can't remember anything, just get in touch with the station.
No, go and listen to the podcast once it gets to the podcast stage.
Yeah, that'll be up there later today. So yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
Well,
Thank you.
Good to talk to you again, Ngaro noa. And absolutely. And very interesting to hear that the revival. I'm kind of intrigued by how did the information and the understanding survive through the colonial period, was as destructive as could be, but somehow a lot of this has survived. Maybe through individuals around the place and the technology and all these different things.
There's just a whole combination.
Yeah.
Of ways that it was, and it's about. You know, I currently hold what would be considered to be a unique document from when I studied, because it was photocopied at the university, so there's no electronic copies. But I feel, you know, to let people know that I have this course readings from that program back in the day. I won't say how long ago.
This is Hurunui Melbourne was doing.
Yes, yes. Okay. That I study. And those are the ways that we're going to share and give so people can also learn from. But primarily through sharing, an online form is what the younger people seem to vibe with.
It's on their phones. You're going to make a TikTok.
Yeah, apparently.
Very good. All right. Well, look, thanks heaps for coming in.
Kia ora.